Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are going to talk about locations we love in entertainment and movie and TV because that's tied into our review of Apple TV Plus's The Last Frontier, the new show created by the blacklist John Bokenkamp. That's right, and we're going to have an interview with Mr. Bokenkamp as well in this episode. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. I will be your host. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Troy Heinrichs.
Yo, yo, what's up?
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
How exciting is it that we're going to get to talk to our old blacklist compatriot, John Bokenkamp, later on? Or you are. I wasn't available.
I was going to say, Troy gets to. I wasn't even invited.
This son of a bitch.
You didn't slave over his show for 10 years like we did.
I did not. I did not. But I did say hi to him, and I feel like that counts for something.
You met him, right? You came to one of our recordings out there
when
at
you guys
C2E2
did
in Chicago.
C2E2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was very, very kind.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, saying hi to everybody and taking pictures. And
he's a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did talk to him about possibly coming back at the end of the season so we could talk a little bit more. And I can be involved in that conversation. And then maybe Amanda can too. Maybe we can figure that out. What do you think, Troy?
Yeah, we can let her into the party.
But Troy, are we expecting your name to get thrown into this TV show also?
No, my name is not going to be in this TV.
It's already been shot.
All filmed, already been shot, already done.
Yeah. Maybe Heinrichs Hospital will pop up in season two. Wouldn't that be hilarious? I'm still waiting for Peterson Psychiatric or something, or, you know, Peterson's Puppies.
Oh, something. Peterson's
maybe,
Puppies.
Maybe they'll go visit Peterson Pines.
Oh.
Hang on. I'm pitching it in case John listens to it, all right? Okay. So in Alaska... All right, they have a lot of sled dogs and puppy farms and things like that. Four sled dogs, like training them to be sled dogs. Peterson's Puppies, it rolls off the tongue. It just rolls right off the tongue.
Or better yet, one of the fugitives jumps onto a cruise ship, and there just happens to be people like us sitting on the cruise ship that goes through town. Because we're going on a cruise in 2026, everybody.
To Alaska. Woo! Links in the show notes. Look at that plug. That was a terrible segue, but it was a good plug. I like that. That was fair.
That's right.
So we're keeping this episode kind of tight this particular week because we're really going to talk about The Last Frontier and interview our good old friend, John Bokenkamp, who has been working pretty hard on this Apple show, which is good because it's Troy's favorite channel. Like, he will not watch anything anymore, I think, unless it's on Apple TV.
It's about right.
It is right. It's absolutely right. Go check the tapes. Go listen to any previous episode and you'll know. All right, so let's just jump in right into the topic, if you guys are cool with that.
Totally fine.
Okay. So we want to talk about like movies and TV shows where the location was just as important as the characters. Now, maybe it's to the story, maybe it's to you, but before we really get into it, I'm kind of curious, is there any movie or TV show where the location, you know, and this stems from The Last Frontier, right? It's taking place in Alaska, where the location actually is really important to you. And I'll give you one that is for me. You know, I love Prison Break. I'm a big fan of Prison Break. I make no excuses for how cheesy that show could be. But what I will say is the fact that it's, you know, Fox River Prison, it's supposed to be in Illinois. Like, the idea of it being in Illinois was always a very cool element to me because I'm from Illinois. And that's just like just one of many examples. I mean, what was it? The Hitcher in the 80s. If you remember that Rucker Hauer movie. I'll never forget being in the theater, seeing The Hitcher with my uncle, and they actually have a call out to Rockford, which is my hometown, Rockford, Illinois. And I about lost my, like, a whole audience is applauding. Like, it was just a great moment. So I feel like location matters to people a lot, especially if they mention their hometowns. Do you guys does location ever grab you?
It's in Hawaii.
Oh God, Lilo and Stitch or Hawaii 5-0.
Even Moana, dude. I'm like, yeah, I want to be there.
It's a cartoon. Even Moana.
It doesn't matter. It's hey, man, the locale, it gets me.
Even Moana.
I want to be there too.
Just like objectified all the Polynesian islands to be Hawaii. They could have been on any of them.
It's true.
Not necessarily Hawaii.
Aren't they Hawaii, though?
I'm with you. I think maybe, you know, I used to think it was the
Lost
characters.
Does that make you feel better?
There you go. Got lost. But I'm convinced I watched Hawaii Five-O like the whole show because it was on Hawaii and they filmed it in Hawaii. And
it's
I just wanted to see
so
Hawaii.
It's so beautiful. Oh. And it's like, oh man, you guys are just hanging out in heaven.
Jurassic Park filmed in Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
Been there.
Yeah, so have I.
It was great. It was a cool experience.
It is pretty cool to go there and you're like, oh, there was a dinosaur here. And then you realize not really because they don't exist anymore.
No, but it was cool to be in the helicopter and come around the mountain range. And then they start playing the Jurassic Park music inside of your headphones. And they're like, dee, 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 dee. And the helicopter lands at the waterfall, just like in the movie. And you're just like, I'm in the movies.
I did, because on Kauai, that's where they shoot the opening for Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I found the mountain and I got in line. And I have my whole shot, the whole behind the head shot, lined up to the mountain, like the whole Indiana Jones thing. Oh my God. And I'm such a dork because I made somebody, my wife, take that picture like 8 times.
And make sure you get it right.
Line it up. You got to get the frame right. So I had to line it up like 8 times to get it right. But man, it's cool when you see a real
location. I did that when I went on the Lost tour. I took pictures of the locations exactly how it was in the TV show. I get it.
Everyone that's ever listened for longer than 5 seconds knows it's like your favorite show ever. So what do they do in the Lost tour? Do they just drop you off on a beach and say live for a week?
Yeah, I wish that was the case because that would have been more fun than going to the driving. And
there
the
is
driving
a there's
the
a beach
and the driving.
There's a beach on Kauai. If like there's a 2 mile hike, and it's like a real private beach. You can actually stay there and like camp there.
Yeah,
very private.
That's cool.
So you can have that. Experience.
I saw it from the helicopter.
So where do they take you?
They drive you around. Basically, they start obviously like in town, so you get to go to places like the convention center that they turn into the airport. You go to the hotel where Hurley and Saeed are staying. You get to see the building that John Locke falls out of. So there's just a lot of cool stuff just in town, and then they start to make their way up towards the North Shore. And as they make their way up towards the North Shore, you get to see places like the Two Trees where they play White Rock, Black Rock between the Man in Black and Jacob. You get to see what they had for Tahiti, where that was existing. You get to see Chinaman's Hat, where the fake aero station was. They take you to the shrimp truck that Sawyer goes to in the first season. The fun fact on this shrimp truck is that in the show, it's parked on the left, and in real life, it's actually parked on the right and backwards. So,
is that a fun fact?
Interesting. I guess I thought it was kind of cool. And then you get to go to the actual crash beach where the plane was actually crashed down. And then you get to go to like the camp beach.
Was it still there?
No, it wasn't still there. and then you go to the beach that they spend most of the time on, right? The beach that they live on in most of the show. And you get that iconic view of like looking down the beach as like you can picture Sawyer or Jack or somebody coming back from a trek, right? Coming around the corner. So I got that shot. Let's see what else we did. The plane that's in the banyan trees, the Nigerian plane. We got to stand in the spot where the Nigerian plane is, which is actually really funny because it's actually growing outside of a out of a parking lot. So when the plane crashes, it actually lands in a parking lot, not necessarily in grass. So all the grass you see in the show is added to the scenery in order to make it look like the jungle floor, which is kind of cool. And then we went to the waterfall that Sawyer and Kate go to in the episode where they find the gun case. I think it's like episode 5 in the first season, and where they also come back to later on in the season, season 5, when they hit that waterfall again. But then you also go to a place where you trek. Anytime they trek between locations through the woods, they're like, this is the river they cross over. And it's the same place every time they cross over.
Oh, wow.
They cross over one way and then they shoot it again with a different camera angle and they walk over the other way. But it's like the same 5 feet that they used for the show anytime they cross the river, which is kind of fun. But yeah, you basically just go around and like see things like Hurley's house, where Ben breaks in and throws the burrito. You see the garage with his dad and him rebuilding the car. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like if you
I can't believe you would see a garage and be like, I recognize that garage.
Well, they tell you it's the garage, and then you stand there and take the picture, and then you go watch the movie and you go or the show, and you're like, oh yeah, that's exactly it. So we recreated me and my friend were standing in the same spot where Hurley and his dad were standing, and we took the picture. So it's cool.
Sounds like fun.
And they got to go to the YMCA camp that was Dharmaville.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. It was cool. It was really cool.
Amanda, what about you? Any location stops that you've made over the years?
The Stanley Hotel. I feel like that was a, I mean, it's interesting because it wasn't actually filmed there, but it still counts, right?
It's the hotel that Stephen King based his book on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It still counts. That one was pretty cool. They try to make it very touristy, but well, it's
claim
it,
to
it
fame.
Wasn't,
why wouldn't they?
Yeah. But it, how do you beat those views too? I mean, I'd be willing to go through a lot for those views. Let me tell you. Okay. But when we talk about like connections to our area, you
or
have,
any area, it doesn't have to be ours. Or,
yeah,
or
but
yours.
I'm just starting there. Yeah. Home Alone and Ferris Bueller, because I'm an Illinois galley as well.
Chicago
originally. Sure. I also think about what was the dang it?
That's so Midwestern right there. Dang it.
Well, you
dang,
have like.
Mabbit.
The Hangover, you can't break that apart from Vegas. That's just ingrained
so
in that.
True. It's so true. You know what's sad is like, still to this day, anytime I go to Vegas, I'm like, I want to have a night like The Hangover. And it's the saddest thing because it's the worst night you'd ever hope to have. But it's just such, it's such an iconic movie. I'm like, I want to wake up to a baby and a tiger in my room. Why not? Sounds like the best party.
Also, for Boondock Saints, it's not actually filmed. Those scenes aren't filmed in Ireland, but it looks very much like Ireland. It's filmed in Canada. So I've always wanted to go to Canada because of some of the scenes in there where I was like, oh, that looks really pretty.
People don't realize how much of what they watch is filmed in Canada. I mean, I think The Last Frontier.
A lot
of that was filmed in Vancouver and whatnot. Quebec. But you also have, I mean,
there's a lot filmed in Vancouver too.
Yeah, Vancouver's one of the biggest spots. I mean, our cruise is actually leaving from Vancouver, and I plan on going early so I can see a lot of filming location spots. Psych was filmed in Vancouver, British Columbia. So there's a lot of spots that you would go and see there that would probably click in your memory to something that you saw in a movie or a TV show. And when you know, kind of like expanding from that, and I would say, you know, think about Lord of the Rings. I mean, look what everybody wants to go to New Zealand now because of Lord of the Rings, because of the beauty and, you know, everything that it captured.
I don't because of spiders, but have fun.
Would you really not want to go to New Zealand because of spiders?
Correct.
Do they have big, giant
they
spiders?
They have spiders here.
They have them everywhere.
No, they're supposed to be big ones. They're supposed to be bigger there
in Australia.
Are you sure
thinking of just Australia? I mean.
No, I thought both of them.
Well, they're pretty close.
Look, Shelob was killed. Her babies don't exist, okay?
Also, Scotland and Europe for Harry Potter. I think about that.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know one
that... La La Land, L.A.
That's a great one because like filming in L.A., getting all the sites in L.A. specifically, especially when they go up to the Griffith Observatory, to be up at the observatory, you get to see like all of L.A. Proper from up there. So it just speaks to like that film is so good.
Except
every time.
L.A. is never as nice as it looks there, except for when they show the congested traffic scene. Like it's just L.A. is not a magical city to me. I've been there multiple times, and every time I'm just like, I want out. And I remember
certain
the first
parts of town are
very, very limited, man. I mean, like everything is just congested and traffic and busy and hectic. It's like every other big city. They're all very
similar.
Yeah,
but that stretch we walked from like the hotel to Sony in Culver City, like that stretch was like old school LA TV studio, bars, jazz clubs. Like it felt clean. Like that part of town felt like you could do a lot of filming there in Culver City specifically.
I will tell you, first time I ever went to Hollywood was I was early 20s and I went there because a friend of mine was going on Judge Judy and I was going to be her witness. So they put us up in a hotel and we got to say, this is all a true story. And I got to be on Judge Judy. That was different. But that's when I first finally went to Hollywood. My whole life, I just want to see Hollywood. And I was kind of disappointed. I thought it was kind of a bummer. It was a little dirty. Man's Chinese Theater is kind of ick, you know. And I think when you and I went back to L.A., you and I went, Troy and I, went back for podcast awards when we won for The Blacklist Exposed. And we actually went to the Paramount lot. And that was a different experience, I think. That was a much more, it felt more magical. So that felt like, so there's a little bit of that movie magic, but you just got to find, I guess, you're like you said, the right spots. But most of everything else is just busy. It's just always busy. And that I am a much more I think I prefer locations that are much more remote, much more mountainous, much more island focused. I mean, couples retreat. I just want to go wherever that is. You know what I mean?
I almost put that on my list for this.
Couples retreat, dude. I would go. I would let that instructor, that yoga guy or whatever, I would let him get handsy. I don't care if it means I get to stay at this place. Get all up in my business, man. I don't care. I'm all good with it. I'd love to go to some of those places. I spent most of my life trying to get to places like that. I still want to go to Japan because I love Black Rain. I want to go to Japan not because of the culture and Nintendo and everything. I want to go because I saw Black Rain when I was a teenager and I love that movie with Michael Douglas and the scenery and the just the spectacle and the locations from that movie. I want to go see those locations. I mean, that's just how weird I am. I'm so movie and ingrained.
I think same for in the same vein as Couples Retreat, but Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was Hawaii. Yeah,
that's a good one.
That was I think that was filmed in Hawaii, wasn't it?
I think so. The one that I correlate to a film that I never want to do personally is Everest.
You don't want to climb.
Catch me climbing that mountain.
Don't want to climb Mount Everest. I mean, the movie's not really like a big selling point either. You know, it's not like, oh, this is going to go well. That's one
I'm just
I don't.
Telling you, that one's not going to be for me.
I don't understand the need to say I climbed a mountain
for speed.
No.
I mean, it's, but I will say, having driven up a couple of mountains, it is really cool being at the top.
Yeah, because you're in a car. Like, I don't want to climb through ice and snow to get there. I don't. I mean, that's
if I was physically fit, I think I would, but I'm just not going to put in that much effort. So
I don't care about my health that much. I'm not going
to
do it.
They have a road paved to go up the mountains for a reason. Okay. Not all of them, but the ones I'm going on.
That's funny. There's a lot of people I know that will actually take trips to go to places that they see in movies. And or when they get to a certain place, they want to go to certain things they saw in movies. Do you guys have any of those? Like I talked about it when I went to Rome, I had to go to the Colosseum, and it was more because I've seen the Colosseum in so many movies, not because of the historical points of view, but because of all the movies that I just want to say, are you not entertained? Any of those for you where you're like, this is a bucket list. I want to go because I've seen this and I can't wait to see it in person.
I mean, I want to go to Capri. Another simple favor getting filled there. I thought that was like beautiful. Gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
Absolutely beautiful. Yep.
I don't mind that the mob is there.
They also have good pizza there.
I mean, the Corleones are out there somewhere too, if you're putting it in
movie terms. Be. Don't mind your business. Your business there, their business is there.
And if they make you an offer, you probably don't want to refuse it.
I also want to ride the choo-choo train in Scotland on the Glenfinnan Viaduct, because that's where the Harry Potter train goes.
Is that a real train?
It's a real viaduct.
A real track.
Yeah, real track.
But they don't have like a Harry Potter. Like, it doesn't take you to a magical little school, right?
Right.
How do you know?
You don't know until you've been on it.
Exactly.
That's why I want to go.
Fair enough. What about you, Amanda? Anywhere you want to go? Bucket list?
P.S. I Love You definitely made me want to. It reaffirmed my goal to visit Ireland.
Do you want to go to castles or just like you want to go to breweries, pubs?
What? No, I don't care about the breweries.
You just hungry
I care about
for
the
some,
nature.
Feeling like some boiled food.
Ew. Cliffs.
That's Irish food.
I know. That's the thing is I'm like, I don't care about beer and I don't like a lot of the food, but I'll get through it for the views.
Okay.
She wants to see the porgs and drink blue milk.
I mean, to be honest, there are plenty of places that are on my bucket list, and it's because I've seen how it's portrayed in film or TV because I've never been there. Like the entire West Coast, I've always wanted to visit. My bucket list item is to take like an RV, take like a week and a half and do a Pacific, like West coastline journey.
PCH.
Yeah, and basically go through all the stops in California, Washington, Oregon, visit all of that. That's like a goal for me. And there are plenty of movies and TV that have shown me what it looks like. And that's where I get the idea where I'm like, oh, I bet you it's beautiful out there.
Oh, man, Cannon Beach is out there. Astoria, Goonies. There's a lot of locations. A lot of X-Files was filmed in Vancouver and also in
Forrest Gump,
Oregon and Washington. Where was Forrest Gump filmed? I don't know off the top of my head.
I think it's somewhere in the Pacific Northwest or California.
Okay. Are you going to get some raw shrimp, fried shrimp?
See, that's the other thing is I don't like any seafood or fish. So
just, you know, it was filmed in South Carolina. So,
yeah, it's more and Georgia. Carolina and Georgia.
Just like,
also
just like Oregon and Washington.
Pacific Coast Highway, California.
Looks the same. No? Do you not know what geography is?
I'm looking it up online. It says that there was filming on that highway.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you.
A Blue Ridge Park, I don't see any of that, but hey, let's just give her the win. That's fine.
You know, just because they call it the PCH in the movie doesn't mean that it's the actual PCH.
Some scenes were filmed at the University of Southern California and in the Los Angeles area.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, did you have to dig pretty deep for that one? I don't know.
No, I Googled it. It's the first thing.
Because that bench is in the Southwest or Southeast. I'm sorry. Southeast.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I was going through, you know, you guys had some stuff written down, but Woodstock, Illinois for Groundhog Day. I was there when they filmed that. True story, as a kid, my uncle took me to the filming of it. And I don't like that movie, but it was cool to see a movie set.
So then you haven't done what I've done, which is where I've actually gone and watched Groundhog Day sitting on the bench so that I could get the iPhone like lined up shot with the gazebo. I like actually watched Groundhog Day sitting in the square.
You've watched the movie?
Oh, that's fancy.
In the square and took a picture of you watching the movie? Wait, what?
No, I was watching it on my phone, but I like watched it in a way so that when I was looking at the scene, right, when they're in the square, I'm like looking at the square, like almost like it's like you're looking through the phone.
Did someone take a picture of you doing this?
No.
Or is this just for your memory?
It was just for my own. It was just fun to do. I was out that way and I was like, I should stop here for like 5 minutes and watch a scene.
People do weird things. Well, that's one of them.
It's close to the house. It's in between where Aaron and I live. It's like a good halfway spot.
I have been to where they filmed the Blair Witch Project too. And I will say that it just looks like woods. It's not.
I bet.
It's not that ominous. It really just looks like a state park. If you've been in one state park, you've been in all of them.
And now I'll never go to a state park ever again.
Why?
That movie scares me.
Yeah, but they're not, you know, it's not real. It's fictional. You didn't know that, right? Like they finally, it's fictional.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure.
Still scary.
Okay. Well, I guess Amanda said she wouldn't. Would you want to go to New Zealand, Troy?
I didn't mention it as my bucket, but it is the bucket list item.
Would you do the same thing with the location?
It was going to Dharmaville, but I've already done Dharmaville, so now the bucket list item is New Zealand. Yeah, for the Hobbit Trail.
Okay, here's something I just want to give you.
Oh, boy.
Okay, take this for what it is.
Are we back to Forrest Gump again?
No. Okay. New Zealand's largest native spider by leg span is the Nelson Cave Spider.
Oh, okay.
Which has over five inches leg span. I'm going to give you a comparison. The average genitalia size of men is about 5 inches.
Oh my God.
That's the spiders in New Zealand.
Well, I'm doing all right.
They are organs.
Eight of those, no matter what they can do.
So if I see a spider in New Zealand, I need to just drop trow and take a measurement. Is that what you're saying? Like, see what this actually ends up being? That's the measuring stick, if you will?
Yeah, by all means. Report out and let us know.
That's so ridiculous.
I hope it bites you.
Oh, my God.
Don't pick it up. It's not a tentacle.
I do know Corey, who I do the Presenting Hitchcock podcast with. If you never listen, it's great. If you love Hitchcock. But he lives in Australia. And he tells me every time I talk to him, he's like, yeah, something was in my house. Like some big giant insect was in there. They're so used to it. It's just like another pet. You just shoo them out. No big deal. They're used to it. Big spiders, Amanda.
I don't think I'll ever even get used to the thought of that being a possibility. I'm in Texas now. And I was just told that thankfully it's not like my area, but wear shoes in your house because you never know when the scorpions are going to be in.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Excuse the hell out of me. What are we talking about?
Have you been to the Alamo? Speaking of movie locations and whatnot.
I have been to the Alamo, just not in the basement.
I have not.
Hmm.
I could easily knock that one out.
I've been to the Alamo twice.
Why'd you go again? Did you lose the first time?
Cause that would be ironic. we went with a high school group initially. And then, you know, we were down on a family vacation and we're like, hey, they want to go to the Alamo. And I was like, okay, been there, done that, but fine.
Amanda, you've been to Washington.
Only a few hours from me.
You've been to Washington D.C. several times, right? Because you went in for the suicide prevention boards that you were on. When you go to the Capitol and things like that, does that is that an instant movie memory for you, or do you think modern politics? Da da da. Because I would think it would be more movie related.
Like it's a little bit of both. I feel very Men in Black, while also feeling very Independence Day.
Sure.
What other Will Smith movie can I integrate in here?
You have a totally different experience, because when I went to Lincoln Memorial, I was looking around for the apes. I was like,
there's that too.
Oh, wait, most of them are in Washington anyway.
See, look at all these. Like, locations matter to people in movies. Like, they really, really do stick with
you. I mean, think about New York.
Oh, man.
That's, oh, yeah. Empire State Building.
Even in Big Daddy, you can look at it and you're like, yeah, you're in New York. Grey's Anatomy. Oh, that's Seattle, but that's also because of the giant space needle
thing. I don't think you're very good with the atlas at this point. Like, I'm really concerned about your geographical skills. Like, I know why you have to use Google Maps now.
It's also not filmed in Seattle. But.
Well, then why do they put the space needle in there?
Well, the outside shots are. I mean,
yeah, the outside shots are all, you know, stock footage.
But that's what they show. She doesn't know. She's saying that it's
that's
still.
What, I've
it
never
still
been
counts.
There, so that's what it looks like.
A
to
lot
me.
Of New York shows aren't shot in New York either. You know, just happens. Those are all stock footage.
Wouldn't it
use.
Be funny if those Chicago shows like PD, Fire, all of that weren't filmed in?
They're filmed in Detroit.
8 Mile, shows, Detroit.
Yeah, right.
Chicago shows are definitely filmed in Chicago.
They are. Yeah, they are.
You know what else?
It's a worthy place to film in.
The greatest. In the entire world, film location is here in Chicago. Mm. And it goes by the name of Lower Wacker Drive. Mm.
From The Dark Knight.
Because of The Dark Knight, good because one. Of Transformers, and because of the Blues Brothers.
That's, yeah, the Blues Brothers. That's good. I don't know about greatest in the world, but it's a
it's it was a total one. Joke. Lower Wacker is the armpit of America. It's worse than Jersey.
It's not great. You don't want to spend the night there.
Don't
that's
use your GPS.
You can't use your GPS. Like, where the hell are you?
Get a principal map quest or an actual map.
But I will, the best part about locations, and this is absolutely true for me, is everything I've wanted to see and do in my life. Like, I love travel. That's one of my favorite things to do. I don't spend money on stuff. I spend money on travel. If I'm going to do anything, I'd rather go somewhere and do it than I would sit in my house and have another painting or couch or whatever. Like, I'll sit on the same couch for 400 years. I don't care. I just want to go do stuff. That's my thing. And almost exclusively, the places that I want to go to come up to me through movies and TV. And obviously, it's because I watch a lot of it, but it also gives me an idea. Oh, I would love to see that and see the culture or see the environment or see the landscapes or, you know, go up to this mountain or climb this or go across this bridge or whatever. I mean, Alaska, so much of it I wanted to go to because of things I've seen in movies and TV. And most of them aren't even, they're all filmed in like Canada. But I still wanted to go see it for myself. And by God, it's even more beautiful than you expect, you know?
I just love that when it comes to location, you get to explore the world. And this was before YouTube, where you could just watch somebody's GoPro of the world.
But that's helpful too. That's helpful
too. It is. But being able to explore the world with what used to be just a few dollars or from the comfort of your home and be exposed to all of these places that you now want to see or these, you know, iconic architecture that you want to go see in person, all of these different things that you get through movie and television. Because, I mean, even for a weird one, but Landman, I'm like, maybe I'll go check out the oil fields out here in Texas.
Okay,
no, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Okay. I think you got to be a real fan.
You got that's dedication. I got to find that third oil pump next to the windmill.
I've driven through West Texas. I'm good. But you get what I'm saying. I mean, a lot of people learn about different iconic statues and things like
and
that
history.
Through movies and TV. Yeah, history.
Milwaukee, my hometown.
What
Happy
about
Days,
it?
Laverne and Shirley. There's a bronze statue of the Fonz on the river.
Oh, yeah. TV classics, yeah.
Yeah.
Tombstone. I wanted to go to Tombstone so bad because of the movie. And my son actually went to Tombstone because of the movie. And it's, you know, it's amazing how much that you know, things like that can impact where you go with your family, like memories you have. Movies and TV are, movies are forever in a lot of ways. Interesting stuff. Well, I think that'll do it for the topic. Hey, if you want to contribute to our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We're going to move on, I think, at this point, unless you guys have anything else.
What location do you want to see that hasn't been done before?
The moon. I want to actually, like, I want Tom Cruise. I know he's going into space. I want him to actually
land
on the moon.
You stole mine.
Is it really?
Yeah, I said, well, specifically, I said that I want to see the light versus the dark side of the moon at the same time. And I actually made a movie, like a movie pitch or a TV show pitch, that it's a city that's in motion. It always moves on the line, as the shaders and the shiners have been told that they can't survive on either side of the line until one person breaks free.
Hmm. I'd watch that. Would you have Pink Floyd do the soundtrack?
Yep.
Only old people get that. I get it. I would seriously. Oh, you're getting old. I would seriously. Oh, now it's an offensive thing.
No, it's just reality.
I do think, even though I think it's ridiculous that Tom Cruise is going to go to space for, I think it's Doug Liman's directing the movie. Because I'm like, you don't need to, Tom. There's no reason to go to space. Like, I saw Gravity, did a pretty damn good job of pretending to be AI's in space. AI's
getting pretty realistic, man. I don't think we need to do it.
Yeah, I don't. We're making digital characters now. We don't need to send you to the goddamn moon. But I would probably watch the hell out of it if he did. So, there. I want to see Top Gun in actual space.
Well, hey, if Tom Cruise can go to space, that means he'll actually get a capsule that works, unlike the things that freaking Musk is putting up and blowing up constantly.
Okay. I don't pay enough attention anymore. It's kind of like gone numb to me.
It should be. We're trying to get back to the moon, and we're behind by 3 years.
Why do we need to go back? What's there? Tom Cruise, he's waiting for us to pick him up. Matt Damon?
There are corporations that are looking for tax evasion, okay?
They're just going to go to the moon and hang out until...
They're going to put offshore accounts on the moon.
Fine. What about you, Amanda? Is there any place that you wish would be covered in movie TV that maybe hasn't been?
I can't imagine that there is a place. There are places that I've discovered because of movies. Mm-hmm. So I can't think of anything other than literally Antarctica, like for real Antarctica.
Why Antarctica?
I don't know. Not
penguins?
Because it's the only thing I could think of.
Okay. Just go as cold as humanly possible.
Yep.
Okay.
I want to see you survive. The newest season of Survivor is take them to Antarctica, leave them, and hope that they make it out.
Nothing about that sounds good.
And Jordan Peele invites you to experience the eerie thrills of the groundbreaking sports horror film, Him, now available to watch at home. Him features over 45 minutes of exclusive bonus content, including a haunting alternative ending, 5 deleted scenes, and behind-the-scenes featurettes only when you buy.
All right, well, let's go to our spoiler-free reviews, because we're going to roll into a review and then also talk to Mr. Bokenkamp.
Greetings, humans. This is your MC. No, not that MC, because the master control is still inside of Dillinger Systems. However, I will be talking to you for the next 29 minutes before I derez once again about the latest Tron movie. That's right, Tron Ares. Hey, all, it's Troy, and I'm just back from the theater, and let me tell you, this is the Tron sequel that we should have had last time. Now, don't get me wrong, Tron Legacy was cool. It was a lot of fun. It had a lot of great concepts. But this movie totally kicks ass. It is so good in the sense of being able to be accessible for the general audience, as well as Tron fans from 40 some years ago, because there is action, there is drama, there is music, there is a cohesive story, there is Easter eggs galore. So if you are a fan, you'll pick up on a lot of fun stuff. If you're new to the Tron world, you could start with this movie and not worry about any of that Easter egg stuff and just enjoy the story for what it is. It does a really great job of just bridging everybody into the concept of what Tron is, which is the digital representation of humanity. In the first movie, we had, what would it look like if we went and saw what a computer looked like inside? This one actually asks the question of what happens when we bring the digital world into reality. So as we face things like AI and AR and VR, we're now asking those questions of, if I can basically have the replicator from Star Trek what would I do with it? And that's exactly what we have here in this movie. So in Tron Ares, we have a new company going up against ENCOM. ENCOM was the original company that Edward Dillinger was the head of and took over from Flynn from the original movie. Flynn was routed out and then sent to run his own games in his own arcade. When he got put onto the grid, he met Clue, he met Tron, and everything was hunky-dory when they took down the MCP, Master Control Program, that was represented by the Stark Program, that was the program of Ed Dillinger. In the second movie, Ed Dillinger Jr. is still on the board at ENCOM, even though Sam Flynn, the kid, was the one that was helping out the ISOs, Korra, to get Korra off the grid. That's all the backstory you need for Tron. In Tron Ares, however, we now have Julian Dillinger, who is the grandchild of the original Edward Dillinger. He and his mother have now started up the Dillinger Corporation, and through the history have been able to create their own version of the grid inside of Dillinger Systems. ENCOM Systems is now run by a new party, a new CEO in the form of Eve. Eve is now basically trying to understand how to take information from the digital grid and bring it into the real world through something called permanence, or the permanence code. And that's basically our story for Tron Ares, is who is going to get to the permanence code first, and what are they going to do with it when they finally actually get the permanence code installed into either the ENCOM system or into the Dillinger system or a sub-program of those systems. If this is blowing your mind, don't worry about it. Just go and enjoy the ride, because as you're going through this entire movie experience, you're going to be going with the beats of a Nine Inch Nails soundtrack. The soundtrack is amazing in this film. It just makes you feel like you're in the grid as you're feeling the pulses and throbs and everything. It was designed in IMAX. Go see it in IMAX, or at least Dolby Digital, an Atmos theater, or AMC Prime, whatever you want to call it. That's obviously the best experience for the sound for this particular movie. There is a little bit of sound mixing issue, though, however, in some of the scenes where the music is a little bit overpowering that you can't understand some of the dialogue. So maybe that was just me and where I was sitting in the theater that I was in particularly, but I had a hard time hearing a few of the dialogue sequences. So just keep that in mind as you're going into this production. But most of our cast for this movie is actually really well cast and actually does a really great job. We'll start with Evan Peters, who's playing Julian Dillinger. He has that real conniving, bratty kid CEO, rose too quickly through the ranks to take over the company feel. Very much mimics a Lex Luthor type character from the Superman movie from earlier this summer. If you like that kind of evil character who thinks that they can just rule the world and do what they can do without any consequences, you'll absolutely love Evan's performance in this role as Julian Dillinger. Greta Lee shows up as Eve, the CEO of ENCOM. Greta, I've seen her do a lot of things in the morning show. She's a real great powerhouse woman actress. So to have her be the CEO of the company in this film, she actually goes from both kick-ass CEO kind of persona and also does the damsel in distress, and actually plays both of those roles very well and goes back and forth between them. Greta really does steal the show in this as the person trying to do the right thing compared to Julian Dillinger's character doing the wrong thing. And then we have Jared Leto as Ares, the program that's a security program built for Dillinger Systems. Jared's job in this role is to portray the understanding or the evolution of what the program is going to do. Are they going to follow the commands? Are they going to revolt against the commands? Are they going to be their own thing and still go against the humans, even though, or are they going to help the humans? Jared's range in this actually has a lot of humor in it as well, as he tries to understand his surroundings and his ability to exist and the journey that he is about to go on. And then, of course, Jeff Bridges is in the film, has a really interesting part playing Kevin Flynn once again. Original Tron fans, even Tron Legacy fans, are going to love the part that he's in. So just keep an eye out for Kevin Flynn when he shows up. And there's, again, a whole lot of Easter eggs that I don't want to give away here, because you just have to enjoy them when they show up. It's just, they're really great. They're really great when they show up. You're going to love it. Overall, Tron Ares is a pretty simple film. They do have a lot of things to explain to a new audience member, they do that fairly well. I think there are some things, though, that they don't explain that a new audience member would be confused about. However, at the same time, long-standing fans would get a lot of the inside information fairly quickly, even if you didn't rewatch it recently, which I'm sure most Tron fans rewatched both movies before this one came out. But overall, I would say it was a great time. We had a blast. A bunch of us went that are big Tron fans to the theater. In front of us, there was actually a 12-year-old kid who had a full Tron helmet with a Tron disc and a backpack, and the disc actually magnetically stuck to the backpack, and when it did, it lit up. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I love to see, that after 40 years, this IP is still going strong and could even potentially go for a fourth movie if this one does well, because there's some little nuggets at the end of the movie that could say, hey, maybe we want one more Tron after all, that this one has now come out. But if I were to give this a score, I would have to say I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I'm giving it a solid 8 out of 10. It is a real great soundtrack from Nine Inch Nails. The choreography for the fight scenes is pretty fantastic. CGI is done really well. And again, the Easter eggs, they're just chef's kiss if you're a Tron fan. So make sure you head out to the theater, see Tron Ares, see it in IMAX, see it in AMC Prime. You're going to have a blast. I guarantee it, especially if you're a Tron fan. Maybe a God of War, maybe not. You to decide as you go take a trip back on the grid. All right, coming up on October 17th, After the Hunt, rated R, sees Julia Roberts back on the big screen portraying a college professor facing a crisis when a student accuses a colleague, leading her to confront a haunting secret from her past. It's going to be really good. I saw the trailer for this. It looks amazing. Alice Dawson's here. Nora Garrett. Also, Andrew Garfield. So that, Andrew Garfield versus Julia Roberts. Like, sign me up.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what to expect from that, but it looks phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really good. The thing that nobody ever thought we would get, but we are getting, is rated R, Black Phone 2.
Mm.
Yes. As Finn, now 17, struggles with life after his captivity. His sister begins receiving calls in her dreams from the Black Phone and seeing disturbing visions of three boys being stalked at a winter camp known as Alpine Lake. Scott Derrickson, Mason Thames, Ethan Hawke, all here for Black Phone 2.
Yeah, Scott Derrickson.
The first one was good, but did we need this?
That's what I said.
No, we didn't. And this is very Nightmare on Elm Street is the way that they're taking this. So I actually like their in. I actually like their in because Scott Derrickson's not a director I love. Sinister was good, but not amazing. I did like the first Black Phone. I didn't need a Black Phone 2 until I saw like how they're doing it. And now I'm like, all right, so you're making like a new Freddy Krueger. I'm curious. So okay. I'll check it out.
Then we have Pets on a Train, rated PG, with a crew of animal bandits embark on a fairly routine swindle. They find themselves caught up in a high-tech professional train heist. It's up to Falcon, a petty thief raccoon, and Rex, a righteous police dog, to save the animal stuck on board with his high-speed runaway train.
I'm in. Sounds ridiculous.
Sounds fun. And rated R, Good Fortune.
Yes.
A well-meaning but rather inept angel named Gabriel meddles in the lives of struggling gig worker and wealthy venture capitalist. Aziz Ansari is here, Seth Rogen, Keanu Reeves, Kiki Palmer. It's going to be a whole crew of folks. Sandra Oh. Should be a good time.
Yeah, they're doing the rounds on promotion, man, and that looks pretty funny, actually.
Well, coming to streaming, we have The Twits that'll be on Netflix. Stop, I'm trying to get through this.
Sorry.
This revolves around Mr. and Mrs. Twit, the two nastiest people in the world, who play mean practical jokes on each other and mastermind elaborate heists along with their crew of trained animals, that is, until one day when the animals turn the tables on the Twits. It says Emilia Clarke and Alan Tudyk and Natalie Portman.
Damn it. I'm going to have to watch it now.
I know.
I'm a bitch.
The next miniseries coming to Peacock is Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy. Mm. From 1972 to 1978, 33 young men were kidnapped, murdered, and buried in a crawl space beneath their killer's house. And no one was the wiser. Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy peels back the twisted layers of Gacy's life while weaving in heart-trending stories of his victims, exploring the grief, guilt, and trauma of their families and friends, and exposing the systemic failures, missed opportunities, and societal prejudices that fueled his reign of terror.
Well, that sounds like a great
What a follow-up time. To that, Aaron.
Yeah, what a joyful time that is. And I'm going to segue to a better show. All right. I think this show is really good. I'm going to tell you about it in a second. The Last Frontier. Now, we're going to have the creator. We already told you that. John Bocamp. He'll be here in a minute. Settle down. First, we're going to talk about a review. Now, we've seen the whole series, but we can only really talk loosely about the first two episodes. And I don't want to spoil anything for anyone. Troy, do you want to spoil anything for anyone?
No.
Okay, good answer. Which is an improvement, because Troy usually loves to ruin it for everyone else. So he's going to behave. And we're going to tell you about the show. The Last Frontier is an Apple TV drama series, debuts on October 10th, where U.S. Marshal Frank Remnick, who's played by Jason Clark, does a great job, as he always does, must track down dozens of violent inmates who escape after a prison transport plane crashes in the remote Alaskan wilderness, threatening the safety of the town he's sworn to protect. Now, one thing I will tell you is, what is this not? It is not Con Air in Alaska, but I understand why you would think that it is Con Alaska. It is not.
The other thing it is not a Catch a Prisoner of the Week show.
It is not. Though there are elements to it, right? There are elements to that as you go. But I think it's important to stress that first part right off the bat, though, because everyone I've talked to about the show, and I've recommended this show to, has said, oh, they watch the trailer and they go, oh, it's Con Air in Alaska. But it's not. There is an underlying conspiracy, a government conspiracy at play here, which Bocamp obviously knows how to do pretty well. Also created by John and Richard Davido. I hope I said that right, sir. What it starts off here is, yes, prison transport crashes. But there's something else to that. There's another element to it that we can't really get into without kind of spoiling it. And as the inmates get loose and they're kind of like out in the wild, and, you know, Frank is trying to find them, his family's also involved. He has a wife and a young son, and also a kind of a tortured past that you come to find out more about as you go throughout the show. There are elements to, yes, they have to round up these cons, they have to get them going, but there's also another element that's more of a government conspiracy element, and that's kind of led by Haley Bennett's character of Sydney Schofield. Prison Break is all I kept thinking about. Shame on me, but that is all I kept thinking about. Username Schofield. How do I not think about Escape Cons and Prison Break? How do I not? Michael Schofield?
Exactly. Nobody? Agree. Right?
Yeah, okay. So that's there. And so also you get Alfre Woodard as Bradford, who is always great. What did you think of The Last Frontier? And keep it vague, Troy, if you would.
Yeah, I thought the exact things that we said, that it's not. I thought it was Con Air in Alaska, and then I thought it was, oh, Catch Prisoner A this week, Catch Prisoner B next week, and do the, you know, Catch a Prisoner as you go along and see different parts of Alaska as we go. And I was pleasantly surprised that that was not what we got. What we got is a really great family story. We got a really great government story. We got a good people outside Alaska versus people inside Alaska story, and how that works out as far as what you consider family. And I think overall, it's just a really good 2 hours for the first two episodes. So if you sit down and watch those back to back, because I believe all both the first 2 hours drop today, as if you're listening to this, right, October 10th. Mm-hmm. The first two episodes will be there. It'll run through December. It's fun. It's fun. And I think this is interesting when you think about me being the Apple TV, you know, person getting paid on the payroll.
We should say, in case they listen, he is not actually getting paid.
I'm actually getting paid on the payroll.
But he talks about Apple so much.
I watch a lot of Apple TV stuff, and Apple TV is typically like very heavy drama, like The Morning Show or Defending Jacob or
Science Fiction.
Innocent, a lot of science or fiction. Science fiction.
Yeah.
Right. Dark Matter, Silo.
Severance,
Foundation, Invasion, a lot of science fiction. This feels like a standard television show that you could see probably on most channels. So I think what this does is actually helps Apple TV bring in new audience to the service, because it's more acceptable for the general population. It's not the brain bleed show. It is very much sit down, watch it. There are some elements that are like, oh, that's a cool twist, or oh, that's a really great angle. And oh, why is Jason Clark in Alaska when I thought he was actually working somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
The character, I should say, Frank Remnick. So going through a lot of that journey of understanding how this town operates and how the town is connected with each other. And also like what is happening with Alfred Woodard and why her character Bradford is involved all the way from not in Alaska. And when you get to dig into, especially Halle Bennett's character, Sydney Schofield, and see her story and how she's tied in this whole thing and how she's almost pseudo running for her life while also trying to help catch these people. It's really all about trying to find this one guy, right? This one guy is played by Dominic Cooper, and he is so good in this role as kind of the what you think is a villain. He may be a villain. You'll have to determine for yourself after you get deeper into the series.
Speaking to that, when you were talking about like it's a much more accessible show than Apple TV does often, I would say it's somewhere, it's a nice mix between streamer and network, right? So it's not generic procedural. It's not that. It just has that more everyday kind of watchability element, which I think streaming needs more of, honestly, while also having that continual undercurrent of mythology that kind of holds it all together. So you'll get elements where Frank is going off and trying to get a con on the loose, so to speak, but also you have a conspiracy element. And I like that they bring that all together. And most importantly are the performances. I'm a big Jason Clarke fan. I told Troy this. Jason Clarke is an actor that I think has done so many intense roles. At the very beginning of the episode, he's smiling, and I felt uncomfortable because I don't know if I've seen him smile anything before. And I was just like, oh, thank God. The guy's, you know, he's a little lighter in this one. He's a very dedicated family man. He's great as, you know, as our U.S. Marshal. And one thing I found interesting is he's also got a son, Luke, and a wife, Sarah. His wife, Sarah, is Simone Cassell. I love her. She's a nurse, and throughout the, I can't say too much, but throughout the series, you know, she gets much more to do. I just think she's a very, very good actress, a great find for the show, and I hope whatever they do going forward that she's a big part of it, because I just find her to be a very compelling actress.
And she's her own character. It's not like she's just the token wife of the exactly, U.S. Marshal. Yeah, like, she gets her own arc, especially in the first two episodes.
She has her own piece to the story. And Alfred Woodard never fails. She's a great actress, and I love what they do with her. And I also love Frank's relationship with the locals. Now, you know, his partner Hutch and things like that. Like, this all comes together into a nice series that is engaging television. You can sit down and watch it. My wife and I barreled through it. I definitely recommend it. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give The Last Frontier? And do you recommend people definitely check it out, or definitely?
Yeah, I would definitely say I'll give you $7.50 to subscribe to Apple TV for at least the foreseeable quarter, just to try this out and maybe a few other shows.
I don't make Troy money, so I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to, if $10 the full price of admission, I give it $8. I really enjoyed it, and you can spend your own money to sign up for Apple TV, but it's worth it because it's a good show, and Apple TV has a lot of good stuff too. Now with that, that's our review. Amanda, are you going to check out The Last Frontier?
I was ready when you guys said it was John Bokenkamp's show, but now I'm extra ready.
Now I feel like we're whores for Bokenkamp. I don't know if that's a good
thing. You are. Thing. You are.
Love the guy. He's a good guy.
Truly whores for him.
I'm a fan. So speaking of that particular individual, Troy, are you ready to talk to Mr. Bokenkamp?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, this is the interview with John Bokenkamp and Troy Heinrichs, which I couldn't make. And Troy, don't blow this. Don't do it.
Oh, no, Troy Heinrichs, I do not want to talk to this guy. Of all the people, how you doing?
Good, brother. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. Good to see you.
Love the backdrop. That's awesome.
Thank you. Keeping it chilly.
Exactly. So, John, we just had an episode of our podcast that discussed iconic locations for movies and TV and how they're actually a character themselves in the show. So, yeah. Very fitting. Alaska. What made you decide to pick Alaska for the backdrop of The Last Frontier?
Well, as you know, Troy, I'm from a town that's smaller than Fairbanks, and I sort of like rural America. And ultimately, not only that's something I understand, it feels like a far more stark contrast to this plane full of lunatics that's going to crash. It could crash anywhere. An early version of the story, it crashed in Manhattan. But by putting it in Alaska, we have our lone U.S. Marshal who is not necessarily expecting this, you know, to happen during his morning jog. And he has this basket of incredibly different, dangerous people. It's just such a stark contrast that it's hard to resist.
Also cheaper budget, I'm sure, than taking out New York City.
Well, that could be too. That's probably true.
So we have this Marshal, Frank Remnick, played by the great Jason Clarke. Now, Jason's been more on the film side, moving over here to TV, coming back to some of his roots. Jason's, he's worked on a ton of stuff over the last 30 years. What drew you to Jason to play this U.S. Marshal, to lead this manhunt with some challenging backstory, if you will?
Jason's great. I think all of us, you know, are fans and know him from something probably different. And he's got such a great body of work. When we were talking about Frank Remnick, who he was, you know, he's salt of the earth. He's somebody who's he's a guy who knows how to change a tire. You know what I mean? He's sort of tactile and a little bit I don't know, his values are maybe a little bit old fashioned, you know. And I think just in from the first time sitting down to talk to Jason about what the show was, you could just sense he was a normal guy, you know, and there's not a lot of fluff, not a lot of BS. He's just a regular dude. And as a producer on the show, also leads with a sort of work ethic and a sense of duty, and also a recognition that it's a job, right? Our hair's not on fire, the sky's not falling, the problems can be solved. So there are a number of reasons why he was a great partner.
Partners are always a great thing. Has a great wife, right? Coming out of the gate. Yeah. Simone Kessel, cast as Sarah. Mm-hmm. Family seems to be a big theme in these first two episodes of the show. Sarah even mentions, I think at one point, that the Marshals are a family to Frank. So how much does family play into these first two episodes specifically?
Family is, I think, a little bit of an unexpected part of it, right? We're sort of presenting as, hey, here's this big action show. And yet at the same time, I think we have really great stories and great performers telling those stories on the home front. You know, not only what Simone is doing as Sarah, but his son Luke and sort of this family that's, you know, really going to be put through the ringer. And I think what's interesting about Jason and Simone, they're friends, longtime friends before this show. And so their energy, watching them work together, it's just, I think there's a little bit of it feels effortless. You know, they feel very natural together in a way that I think is just great.
Until they have this firecracker that comes into play, Sydney Schofield. Now, obviously, this is not the daughter of Michael Schofield in some kind of Prison Break crossover, is it?
Not that I know of. No, not that I'm aware of yet.
No, but Haley Bennett does an amazing job these first two episodes. She's an up-and-coming agent like her father before her, but she looks like she's facing some challenges of her own in regards to this plane crash, especially how she has to deal with Frank on that first basis when she shows up in Alaska.
Yeah, look, Sydney is presented as she's an outsider. She's somebody from the city. She's somebody who's speaks different languages and travels the world and is sort of dipped in espionage, which is the opposite of who Frank is in almost every way. And the fact that she has shown up to look for an inmate who is not on the manifest, who is not supposed to be on this plane, raises all kinds of questions for Frank and really sets them off you know, to lock horns as we go forward.
Love it. Opening credits are a big topic of convo in the TV world. Some showrunners are like, we don't want to waste runtime on those. Some streamers even add the skip button on there so the audience can just go through it. Opening credits were amazing. I thought they were great. Little clips from
like them?
Yeah, first two episodes, like good. Little nuggets in there. Some people like to hide clues. Are we going to see clues? Are the credits changing as we go along through the course of the series?
You know, I love that you would ask that. They're not. I had thought about that. That would be interesting. You sort of, you know, there's little Easter eggs within the title sequence, but it was a heavy enough lift just to finish the episodes and get them all in fighting, you know, weight, as opposed to going in and tinkering with the titles. But I really do love the titles, and I think they're a little bit of a throwback. You know, it's like we're not going all the way back to like the Dukes of Hazzard and sliding across the hood of the General Lee or sort of a Remington Steele. You know, but just a little bit of fun with it to sort of set the tone that. You know, that's the vibe of the show.
I mean, maybe a little Hill Street Blues kind of feel to it.
Hill Street Blues. Yeah, a little bit.
Alfrey showing up, Alfrey Woodard, speaking of Hill Street Blues. What a catch. I mean, come on.
It's fantastic, right?
That is so good that she's still working, doing the amazing things that she does. Can we talk a little bit about Bradford and how she's pulling this, you know, big wig at the CIA type position?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, Alfrey is fantastic. I think she's great in the show. She's a wonderful professional who's obviously done a lot of great work. In this show, she played, it's funny, this was written as a kind of crusty old white guy, this role, and somebody really kind of bitter and angry. And when she got it, she's like, I don't want you to change it. She didn't want to change the name, you know. And she wanted to play it as it was, warts and all. And I really respected that. I thought it was really interesting that she was like, I'll find it. Just let me do the thing. And she was a great collaborator.
Yeah, I remember her going toe-to-toe with Patrick Stewart in First Contact and just like the vibrato, the gravitas that she brings. And now she's in this role where, I don't know, maybe she's a good person, maybe she's a bad person. It's really hard to tell in the series in these first two episodes, like who are we supposed to be rooting for at the end of the day?
Well, she's certainly morally ambiguous, right? I mean, there's certainly, she works for the CIA. So just from the get-go, we can sort of make some assumptions about who she is. But I think Bradford, like Sydney, like Frank, like Havelock, all of these characters are not exactly who they present themselves to be. And I think, again, the question of identity is sort of at the center of this. And who are these people as opposed to sort of who they want us to think they are, you know? Even if that's self-aware, you know, whether that's something that they're technically trying to guard against or unaware that they're guarding against secrets in their past, perhaps.
Speaking of the guards and being on the plane as that plane sequence comes down, can we talk about the Oneer? And when Frank shows up on scenes in the plane discovery, what a great idea to have that action sequence as a one shot. Like, is that more that we can expect as the series goes along to have some camera trickery to really showcase Alaska and the wilderness?
You know, I think the Oneer is sort of a, at least within the canvas of our show, is very much a Sam Hargrave thing. He is so good at that. And, you know, it makes it a little tough when the scene that's supposed to be 3/4 of a page ends up being 3.5 minutes, you know, in the show. You go, wait a minute, we're trying to hit a time here, keep it in the pocket, but you got to let him go. You know, you just get out of the way. And to watch how Sam and his brother Daniel choreograph that stuff, how it really is a dance, right? Between camera operators and focus pullers and actors and stunt performers. It's really special. And that was not scripted that way. I have to give credit to our exec, Chris Parnell, is like, I think this is a great place where Sam could do his signature Oneer. And Sam's like, great, have at it, let's do it. So yeah,
totally amazing. Yeah. Especially like, I remember the shot where he's like on the ground and he's trying to fight for his life. And then you think that all of the agents on the plane are completely toast. And then boom, here's one agent that steps up to save his life and get a, what do you say? Snuffleupagus off to the hospital to hopefully make things happen.
my Snuffleupagus, Donnie. Yeah.
Well, we know you for your music tastes. Music always makes or breaks a scene. Unchained Melody through the entire plane crash, like so many little nuggets there about being unchained, being unhandcuffed, right? The fight sequence, like Hunger for Your Touch. So many jokes that you can make through that. Why Unchained Melody in that sequence?
You know, Troy, we tried a lot of stuff, right? And that, I think what's so fun about that song, not only am I a huge Elvis fan, but that song should probably be the last choice of what should be playing there, right? It should be some action-y music that's going thump, 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 and we're running along we're trying to look cool. I love playing against type with that. And I think what's important to me about it is it sets a tone, right? It establishes in our opening sequence where we could try to be just kind of cool and muscly that we're going to have fun with it, you know? And that, and I think Unchained Melody really worked there. And we try to do that throughout the show. I think, in fact, you'll appreciate each episode is titled after a song in that episode. So the first one is Blue Skies, you know, Winds of Change. There's all kinds of, there's a little Easter eggs there. But the music's very important.
Oh, we can't wait to see that as we go along for sure. John, great place to end episode 2, like big shocks coming. What can you tell us about the rest of the season as we wrap up?
Well, I think, what can I tell you about where things go? What I'm most excited about is that there is, like Blacklist, a little bit of a hybrid between sort of a procedural vibe and a larger arcing story that is a season-long arc. And I'm happy with the way that we land that. I think audiences should expect an answer and expect some resolution within this story. Yes, there could always be more, But I think the story that we set out to tell is a compelling one. That I think everyone involved stuck the landing, and I just hope people can tune in and check out and forget about the world for a little bit and have fun.
And I think it's great that it's not necessarily case of the week, go find this bad guy from the plane. There's a lot of mixture, and it's really great pacing as it goes along.
Yeah. There was an early incarnation of this, Troy, years ago. The very first idea was a little more 24. It was like, maybe every week there's a crypt. It's a little, it wasn't quite the right vibe. This, I think, feels like the right mix, the right chemistry for where we are right now.
Yeah, well, we can't wait for the rest of the audience to see it. First two episodes of The Last Frontier are available now on Apple TV Plus. If not already a subscriber, you can go ahead and check it out with a 7-day free trial and just $12.99 a month thereafter, or get a free month when you sign up with Apple One subscription. John, always great to chat, and can't wait for all the rest of the secrets we're going to see this season on The Last Frontier.
And it's great to see you. Tell Aaron hello.
Will do, for sure. Good to see you, buddy.
All right, cool. See you, man.
Okay, that was our interview with John Bokenkamp. Troy, you did a great job as always.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
you should have asked better questions, though. I mean, if I was there, I would have had really hard-hitting journalism. You know what I mean?
You should have written the questions down ahead of time and sent them to me.
Ooh!
That probably would have worked well, right? Well, you asked a couple, I think, that I had thrown in there. At least I hope so.
Are
the time
you just
you
taking
this.
Credit for it?
You don't know. You won't
know me so well.
Maybe. The good ones he won't give me credit for. The real important question is Frank the mother? That's what I need to know. Is Frank the mother in this show? That's what I need to know. Nobody asked. What the hell? Just kidding. Thanks for doing that. And we definitely will come back at the end of the season. I hope. I already talked to John about it. He said he would be happy to. I think that would be fun to wrap the season up.
Well, now it's on the episodes. Now he's obligated.
That's right. It's contractual. Yep. I'm sure that's how that works.
Exactly right? How that works.
Anything you guys want to say in closing about locations? Anything else?
We're getting closer to Halloween. It's going to be an interesting
so excited.
Time.
My favorite time of year.
Ooh, spooky season.
That is very exciting.
Might have
but
to
also,
do.
Speaking it's a about Friday locale.
Night. It's a Friday night.
Just remember that if you want to explore some of your own locale in person, to join us for the 2026 Hollywood Outsider podcast cruise to Alaska.
Our final cruise. Yep.
Don't say it like that. Well, don't put it out there like that.
It's not a final cruise. It's just our final time doing a cruise. That's all I'm saying.
No, I don't want it to be final.
Okay. We're going to do six more. Is that
just leave it open-ended, Aaron.
You have to lead it. You have to run it. If you're willing to do that, then we'll go again.
There you go.
We literally have a former podcast host who is a travel agent. Isn't that what he's for?
Is he a good travel agent? I mean, that's really the debate here.
He is pretty good.
Okay. All right.
Wanderstruck Travel.
He's a great
Brian Williams.
Travel agent.
So you guys are like... Let's break it
down.
Don't
toot his horn.
You
know what? Yeah.
You know what?
He's a decent.
Come to the
he's
cruise and you can meet him yourself. He'll be on the cruise, as will us and Scott Clark, former host. Like, so we'll be there. And John, I don't know. He hasn't committed yet. I don't know what he's doing, but he might be there. I don't know. But
if you want a discount on your Wonderstruck travel plans, just make sure you bring him a drink when you go meet him.
I think it is funny. Like, that is our plan. We are going to Alaska. The real Alaska. So you know, maybe you'll see some Last Frontier locales. I don't know, but you're going to see some Alaska. It's a beautiful place. Great place to visit.
Inside Passage twice. Can't beat that.
Can't beat it. Links in the show notes. That's it for this episode. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks John for popping by. We really appreciate that. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch watching Last Frontier.
Watch Apple TV Plus.
Or Apple TV Plus. Send Troy a check. Buy popcorn.
We should probably clarify that we're not ribbing on John Bokenkamp about the cruise. We're ribbing on John Davenport about the cruise.
Why do we need to clarify that?
Because I don't want John Bokenkamp to feel offended or pressured.
Is John Davenport the mother?
Actually.
What a twist. That's where he's been.
Plot twist.